Hi everyone, I'm Scott Brown, and before we dive into today's lessons I learned in law, I just wanted to tell you about our friends over at Beamery. Beamery is a real game changer in the world of talent management, so HR and talent teams should definitely take note. It is trusted with the likes of Accenture, McKinsey, AstraZeneca and Uber, to name a few. Now, this is a great piece of recruitment technology, which is an AI-powered talent platform that will enable you to hire candidates faster, develop the skills of your existing workforce, and increase employee retention. With Beamery, you'll have a complete understanding of your workforce's skills and capabilities, and it's all about building an agile and future-proof team. So check it out. Head over to their website at beamery.com. Hi, welcome to Lessons I Learned in Law with me, Scott Brown. I'm founder and managing director of Heriot Brown In-House Legal Recruitment. We are specialists in placing lawyers and fulfilling careers in the in-house market. If you've not listened to the podcast before, on each episode, I'm delighted to be joined by a top legal mind. I hope my guest today doesn't mind me calling him that, as they break down three key lessons that they've learned from working in law. The idea and the hope is that you leave it informed and inspired and can see some things from your career that you could apply to your own career path. I'm delighted to be joined today by Kenny Robertson. Kenny, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me, mate, and thanks for calling me a top legal mind. It's not something that it's not something I'm used to being described as, but I'll take it.
Oh, well, there's a first for everything. So Kenny's head of outsourcing technology and IP at the legal team at NatWest, which is formerly RBS, and he's been there as part of the furniture. He's been there for 17 years. So we'll dive into that a bit more in his career and what took him there during our conversation, no doubt. I'll apologise in advance. We'll put subtitles, I think, on for this episode. I tend to find myself slipping into a deeper Scottish accent when I'm speaking to a fellow Scot. But good to chat, Kenny, and really happy to have you as a guest.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And I too will try and speak slowly and as eloquently as I can manage.
We'll jump in. Kenny, we'll jump to your first lesson.
The first lesson for me was the importance of being yourself. I think when I started out in my career, as you mentioned, I've been at the bank a long time. I was in-house at a software company before then, and I started out in private practice. And I think when I started out, I sort of conformed to what I thought a lawyer should be. Aloof, standoffish, sort of ivory tower, very keen to sell IQ without realising as I sort of grew up. And it dawned on me that it's a contact sport. Giving legal advice and legal support, and it's a relationship game. And I think it's hard to build relationships unless you're authentic and you're genuine and you can be yourself, and the stakeholders or clients are able to see that and start to forge a relationship. When I was younger, I suppose I didn't have the confidence to do that necessarily, and I still see that a fair bit in others, of thinking they need to conform to what their idea, what their concept of a lawyer is, rather than allowing them to be who they actually are. One of the things I really enjoy about my job at the bank is I can't be myself. Then you're encouraged to be yourself and bring all your ability to the table, rather than sort of conforming to a sort of set stiff idea of what being a lawyer means. And we'll maybe touch on this later on, but certainly from my perspective, the job has shifted significantly in 2023 from what it was when I started, and it's important to flex with that. So that's been my first lesson, which is I've tried to embed with myself and the team, is the people being feeling comfortable to be themselves.
Very good lesson. Where did you sort of flip that switch? Is there a time in your career where you feel it first clicked for you?
Probably when I left private practice. So I, when I started out, I trained at a firm, trained in Glasgow and London for a short period. I qualified as an IP lawyer, and I left there when I was 2 or 3 years qualified to join a company which was called Graham Technology, and it's been bought and sold a couple of times since. That was kind of revelatory for me in terms of what that was like moving in-house and the difference between the environment I was used to with the environment I was going into and the culture that was there, which maybe neatly or otherwise leads into my second lesson, which was, as you probably have picked up, Scott, I use all football analogies. And my second lesson is about playing with your head up, which I kind of learnt very much at Graeme Technology. And what I mean by that is, whether it's rugby or football, playing number 10, of what's going on, what are the plays, where's the opportunity, what's around the corner. And when I moved to Graeme Technology from private practice, I realised quite quickly that there was far more to being a fully contributing member of staff than simply giving technically correct legal advice. So, you know, even in the induction training, talking about, you know, the books being encouraged to read, putting an emphasis on curiosity, I found that, as I said, an absolute revelation. The humanity in terms of management and leadership, the importance of openness and transparency. And to answer your question around being yourself, me being a sort of, you know, straitjacketed lawyer wasn't going to work. You know, everybody, we had, I think, 200, 250 members of staff. You needed to get stuck in, and I needed to be part of that team. There was only a couple of lawyers there, and I had to adapt to the environment I found myself. And being, as I said, a traditional lawyer wasn't what they needed, which worked for me. It was great. I loved my time there. It was really transformational. And a lot of the concepts that I picked up there, a lot of the thinking that I learned there, I very much adapted into when I became a grown-up. And I eventually, you know, got my own team. And the couple of years I was there, what I learned stayed with me. So that focus on learning, as I said, being curious, what's around the corner, what can we adapt? We do, as a team, weekly what we call learning labs. And it's just small, literally bite-sized type things, an hour a week maybe, focusing on different topics. And through those learning labs and other, just generally the culture, which I'll talk about later on, we've introduced a whole bunch of stuff from other teams, other areas of law, and some things out with law. So, for example, we've looked at how Pixar operate, we've taken some of their sort of concepts of brain trusts, we use behavioural science, we sort of try to roll out nudge theory, design thinking is quite a big thing for us, psychological safety. We work with the O-shaped lawyer, as we were talking about earlier on, Delta Model Lawyer. We've rolled that out as well. And we wouldn't have known any of that stuff if we weren't playing with our head up and we weren't trying to build a network, use a network, understand what might be able to fundamentally make the boat go faster. The result of all that is, I think, we operate much better as a team. I think we are much more engaged as a team when we are able to talk about things like design thinking. We've got a lot of stakeholders and innovation teams in the bank. They work in design thinking all the time, and just being able to hold a conversation with them about the various stages of design thinking, they don't really expect that from us. And when we are able to demonstrate that we're aligned with where they're going, it makes a big difference. And it generally just makes us more interesting and more interested as a team with stakeholders, and much more engaging as a result. Yeah, play with your head up has been fairly central to how I've tried to operate.
Excellent. Just going back to that move in house to Graeme Technologies, who was teaching you that? Was it other lawyers, or to have that shift in A, being yourself, and B, being curious and looking at different perspectives? Were you working with other lawyers in that team, or was it the business as a whole?
Yeah, the latter.
Right.
It was just very much in the DNA of the organisation, is that they were a fairly dynamic young leadership team, which wasn't what I was used to. But yeah, you just had to very quickly adapt and pick up, this is how things are done around here. And it was great. As I said, I think I thrived in it. You also realise no one sits you down and explains, this is who you need to be here. And that's part of, maybe I was talking about being yourself and it being a contact sport, is being able to read a room and understand what a client or a stakeholder needs and wants. Is, yes, you need to give legal advice and mitigate risk, but you also need to do it in a way which is accessible and the way that the stakeholder needs it or the client needs it, not the way you want to deliver it. So rocking up and sending a lengthy email to cover your backside, what are you doing? You need to be able to adapt. So yeah, it was just very much in the sort of DNA of the organisation.
Yeah. Where do you think, and the being yourself and feeling you have to play up to that preconceived ideas of what a lawyer is, where do you think that comes from? How does that come around? Because it's something I hear a lot speaking to junior lawyers, but also I guess people throughout the profession.
I mean, I think it's a fairly conservative profession, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's worked. I mean, we operate in a profession that is built on tradition and precedent, and how things were done before, and maybe looking in the rearview mirror. And that's kind of what's expected to some extent as a lawyer. You're a safe pair of hands. One of the things I like about working in-house is, yes, you're all that, but certainly in my team, you've got a bit of a longer leash to go and experiment and try things and innovate. So I think it's just traditionally, Scott, being hardwired into what a lawyer means. I think what I touched on earlier on, I think we're maybe at a bit of an inflection point about what it is to be a lawyer in 2023, and whether that's driven by some of the generative AI that's emerging, that I think in a few years' time may pose some interesting existential questions for what the skill set is in a lawyer in 2023. But I think some of that also feeds in the expectation, if you like. Apart from dentistry, we have the worst statistics for depression, suicide, addiction, and so on. I do wonder how much of that is not just workloads, which is obviously something to do with it, but also maybe some people feeling they can't be themselves and they need to be someone they're not. And that's not a lot of fun every day, is being someone that you feel you need to be rather than who you are.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that stat in terms of being compared to the dentistry, but yeah, I think the culture is a huge thing. And I think the profession, you can say across the board, does have that stuffiness. And you do a lot of work around the diversity. And we first met during, it was an Interlaw event. Tell us a bit about the sort of work that you've done there, both as an individual and with how you've implemented some of those things at RBS. I think you touched on a couple.
During lockdown, George Floyd's incident happened. And as you mentioned earlier on, my whole team is based in Edinburgh. And from a race perspective, if you like, I think whatever stats are, 98% of Edinburgh is white. There's not an awful lot of diversity in Scotland generally, racial diversity at least. And that was always, well, what do you expect? That we don't do an awful lot for people of colour. And we sort of challenged ourselves of, is that really an okay? Do we really get a pass for that? So we were in lockdown. Everyone was working on a screen. We were a small square on our laptop. So we started to think about, well, actually, does that pass? Do we just sort of pretend there's nothing we can do? Is that a really sustainable answer? So we reached out to people we knew, except, you know, Catherine McGregor, Celine Brett, and others, and we put in a work experience program. And in that work experience program, it was targeting particularly law students who were of a non-white background. So with others from Salford, from London, from Manchester, Coventry, whenever it was, we used our network to have diverse students coming in and spending a week working with us. That was great. I mean, it's still ongoing. It's now, you know, that we've now working with the Scottish Ethnic Minorities Law Association, the bank, and our legal department has a First Steps programme that we reach out to law students from disadvantaged backgrounds, and we have them in en masse. Some of them come back into my team for a week at a time, and it's been great. It's good for the soul as a starter for 10. It's the right thing to do, but in terms of the talent that is out there is enormous. We've had some really, really impressive students with us, and even from our own pipeline, in terms of, you're quite interesting, law firms invariably come and swallow them up before we can get our hands into them. But it's been a really great experience for us. Hopefully it's been a good experience for students as well. And let's talk about culture as well, but it's supported who we're trying to be as a culture in terms of trying to give back as best we can.
Nice. Really good to hear, looking outside the box in terms of, like, not just being defined by where the team's based. Fantastic. So the football analogies, where do those weave their way into your daily conversations?
I'm amazed I've only used one, but I use far too many. It's completely ridiculous. But I think you describe yourself, I think, maybe as a reluctant lawyer. I would describe myself as an accidental lawyer. The only reason I really did law was my mother saying to me that her father, who died long before I was born, but, you know, how amazed he would have been to have a lawyer in the family. So,
right.
Okay, I'll give it a go.
Yeah.
Wanting, you know, but fundamentally, I wanted to be a footballer. Sadly, I was not good enough. And by the way, it wasn't that I, you know, just didn't make the grade or I broke my leg. I was not good enough with a capital N G E. So yeah, I football's sort of been part of my routine. I've got a season ticket at one of the major teams in Glasgow, and it's not Celtic.
Yeah. So I alienated another half of the audience.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, apologies. your listening figures will be plummeting. I know it's a bit of a busman's holiday, but when you do look at some of the initiatives in football, some of the stuff that Guardiola did at Barcelona and the sort of culture that he's, you know, tried to infuse into a dressing room and into a club, there isn't, I know it's easy to overdo the sports psychology and the sports analogy. I know that's very popular with middle-aged men like me, but I've tried to lift bits and pieces that are relevant while not boring my team senseless by using too many analogies.
How have you learned management? How have you acquired that skill set?
I read quite a lot, and I try to learn from others. I mean, I've made lots and lots and lots of mistakes, but trying to say to my daughter, she's 13, there's an easy way to do things and there's a hard way to do things. The easy way to do things, trying to learn from others. And also that I think there's something to be said for sort of what I talk about, vicarious learning. So wherever you are, is looking at how others are leading or managing and asking yourself questions. Well, did that work? Did that motivate me? Did that inspire me? Did that make me feel belittled? Or did that actually, is there something that I can steal? So we used to have a general counsel at the bank called John Collins. John mentored me for a period when he was at the bank. I adored John. I thought he was tremendous. You know, I would look at John when he was on his feet, his humanity, how he knew everybody's name, was very inclusive. He made you feel part of something, and I would try and learn from that and in terms of the impact he had on people. And likewise, you look at others and I'm not sure I'd have said it that way, or I'm not sure that landed, or I'd have given a bit more of yourself there. And I've tried to do that as I've gone through my career. But as I said, you're going to get scuffed up and you're going to make mistakes, and I have lots, but I do try and read reasonably widely and talk to others, have a network, ask what's worked, what's not worked, learn from others. One of the main advantages we have as lawyers is there's a lot of clever people, and there's a lot, particularly in-house, there's a lot of generous people with their time, and there's a great ecosystem to lean into each other. And learning from others who are, in my experience, invariably incredibly generous with their time and incredibly keen to help and incredibly keen to try and make the profession better and bring on the next generation. Leaning into that is one of the things I really, really enjoy about working in-house.
Yeah. I think that's also a great lesson for people as well, listening, and any junior lawyers that listen that are, I don't know, apprehensive or put off maybe reaching out to people or don't think it's their first point of call, right? There's a lot of people out there that do want to help and very generous with their time and paying it forward, or whatever phrase you want to use.
I was listening to one of your previous podcasts and Stirling Miller was on it, and we have a team have read Stirling's blog posts for years. He happened to post one a couple of months ago that was very on point to something we were looking at. I just reached out to him, messaged him, and you know, immediately comes back to me, great, you know, great to my chat, anytime you want to speak. That's the kind of thing that makes the world go round, and it's giving that back, and that generosity is exactly what I'm talking about. So yeah, I would completely agree to the young team, what's the worst that's going to happen? Someone's not going to reply. They probably will reply. People are flattered that you're interested. But yeah, I would certainly be brave and reach out if there's something you're looking to build on.
Yeah, nice. What was your position as a footballer?
Yeah, I played in midfield, badly. I'd like to say box to box and getting up and down the park, but that wouldn't be true. So yeah.
Having moved here, I've just recently reached out to a football team to try and make a wider social group of friends. And I think I'm going to play tomorrow night. They're an 11-a-side team. I'm actually quite worried I've not kicked a ball in about 5 years. I'm actually dreading them being really good and then just being like, oh no. Like, you text the guy the other day. I was like, what's the sort of standard age? What's the age group of the team? Is it 25, 24 to 37? I'm 38, so I'm fit. I'm not football fit. I'm vanity fit and going to the gym, but not run that distance. So we'll see how that goes. I'll be crippled, I think.
I'll be intrigued to hear how you go on with the Dutch technique against the Scottish lump it to the big man.
Exactly. I don't know. Get them turned.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. If in doubt, get it out. Total football purists are horrified.
Yeah, I'll let you know when I can't walk to pick up my phone.
Yeah.
move on to lesson three.
Third lesson's about culture. Maybe to some extent what I've spoken about before is largely in all fours with the culture, but the work that I've tried to do as a team on culture is the best thing I've done as a leader. I mentioned reading books earlier on. One of the guys I like to read is his name's Ben Horowitz. And there's a quote in one of his books that if you don't set your culture, two-thirds of it will end up being accidental and the rest will be a mistake. And I think that's probably true. So when I mean, this is going back, there's a bit of a journey here around how we've tried to implement culture. But when I became team head a few years ago, one of the things that we did early was introduce this concept of psychological safety. And let's start talking about that. And we ran something called failure camps, which is a concept that was created by Professor Kat Moon. She's a lecturer at Vanderbilt Law School in Nashville, and Kat's a friend. We started to run these failure camps to build up that sense of openness, vulnerability, and trust. So we began to have that platform in play, and then that allowed us to have embryonic conversations about things like, what do we mean by culture? What does that word mean? It's bandied about a lot. It's important we're clear about what that means. So how are things done around here? How do we interact with each other? How do we want things to be around here? And then we spoke about, well, what is our culture right now? And this is where the psychological safety bit came in of, let's be candid with each other and let's be honest about where do we think we are culturally, warts and all, and where do we want it to be? And that ultimately led to a fairly long list of incontrovertible statements about what kind of team we wanted to be. So it's far too long, 26 bullet points. But importantly, it kind of got us used to living this. So it wasn't just a whole bunch of words stuck up in a wall. It was stuck in the inside of our sort of jotter things when we're in the office. It was referenced in team meetings. And ultimately that became three sort of cultural pillars, as we call them in the team. The first is high performance, which doesn't mean perfection. It means you do the best you can, with an asterisk of you're going to make mistakes sometimes. And we're human, and it's important that you can share missteps with others from a trust perspective, from a vulnerability perspective, belonging, and also, to be honest, just sharing risk. Because the chances are, if somebody did X to try to achieve Y and Z happened instead, most people would have done X to achieve Y, and it's useful just sharing that what actually unpacked there. So high performance, do the best you can, grow, try and lean into things. The second thing is about a progressive mindset, which is really what I was touching on earlier on about playing with your head up around being curious, what's around the corner, what's going on out there, what are market trends, are we speaking to the right people, what could we bring in, try and get kites in the air to try and see what works in terms of how we operate as a team. And the last point is teamship. And that isn't just going out for a pint with each other, although that obviously has its place. It's about forgiveness. It's about tolerance. It's about accepting. It's about a bad day, not making a bad person. It's about being coachable. It's about assuming positive intent and accepting people as they are into the team. That's our three cultural pillars, and they really are pretty much our North Star for how we operate, how we recruit, how we behave. We ran a session a couple of weeks ago with Denton's and the O'Shape guys, and they want our culture to travel so that they, for example, can feel that this is what we're about as a group, rather than without me having to say is one, two, and three, but just, again, general feel of this is what we're about. We also talk about as a sort of growth opportunity for people in the team, but of us being cultural architects. So whether you've got, I was going to use another football analogy about having an armband on your, you're wearing the armband. But
yes.
whether you're in a formal management position or leadership position, you can still adopt a role of being a cultural architect in terms of, you know, role modelling, leading the correct type of behaviours, even when it's hard. And a lot of this stuff is hard. It's easier to, you know, if you're annoyed at someone, to, you know, complain about them or bitch about them to somebody else. That's not okay. That's not how we operate. That's not the sort of team we want to be. So that's all led to, I think, the team being in a really good place. I think it's a happy team. I think our recruitment's gone well. I think we are in a good place. But the culture that we have has underpinned everything we do, and I've got no doubt it's the best thing that I've tried to introduce in my time.
That sounds great. I think a really good overview of that culture and how the process that you went through and everyone been involved in defining that. How does it align with the business's values and culture?
So we have our five bank values, and it aligns quite well with them. So there's us going through all of them, and he says under pressure to try to remember all five. But it's things like inclusive, robust, sustainable, ambitious, and curious. Well done, me. I got to the five. So things like curious is absolutely on point. Ambitious, I want us to be a high-performing team. I want us to be the best we can be. And sustainable, but we're talking earlier about ESG and human rights. And I mentioned about, you know, we became, I think, the first UK bank to go out with climate transition clauses in all our templates for supply contracts. We did that because we play with our head up. We're talking to the Chancery Lane, what's going on, how can we get involved in this, how can we help support the bank's ESG agenda and the bank's climate goals. So it's a strong alignment to where we're trying to be as a bank, particularly given the sort of technology agreements that we do. More and more the bank is operating as a technology company that happens to be in financial services, so both in terms of the technical work that comes through the door and in how we operate, there's a huge opportunity for my team to be in a really nice place to positively impact where we're trying to go as a bank.
Excellent. Thanks for sharing those lessons, Kenny. Those are great and a really good insight into what it's like working in the bank and what's got you to where you are today. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me. I've enjoyed it.
And anyone out there that's looking to reach out and flood your inbox with those requests for a quick 5 minutes, how would they be best to reach out?
I'm on LinkedIn. That's probably easiest. And yes, yeah. I'll promise I'll not be a hypocrite and ignore you if you want to reach out. I promise I'll come back to you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed that lesson of lessons I learned in law. If you have, then please subscribe over on your favourite podcast platform, whichever that might be. And if you've got any suggestions, we're really keen on hearing your feedback, any suggestions of guests or topics that you would like us to cover in particular, then reach out on hello@harrietbrown.com or drop me a message on LinkedIn. I've been Scott Brown. Thanks for listening. Till next time. Bye.